I think that whole thing in a brand new place with brand new people that didn't know me, didn't know who I was, the added pressure of ROTC and all of the struggles of that, really played into it. And I honestly think I was trying to tell myself that I could do it. I was so torn. It was so torn because if I stayed in, think of all the great benefits that would come from it. You know, I'd have a job, I'd be college is paid for,
right?
You know, whatever. But the cons were that I wasn't happy.
Okay, welcome to the podcast. I am Dr. John Duffy, and I am thrilled to have Jillian with me here today. Welcome, Jillian.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have here because I've known you for a while, but not real well.
Right.
But in this community, I always picture that you are a noteworthy person for good reasons almost all the time. I feel like a lot of people know you and think well of you, and would be surprised that you have many struggles at all. That's part, and so you wrote something, a blog that you posted online about anxiety, and I want to get to that at some point, but start wherever you want in your story. I want to hear from the beginning, you know, kind of like how did things evolve for you? So wherever you like to start, let's get started.
Sounds good. Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Glad you're here.
I think, you know, my story begins with my history of being an Army brat with my dad, being in the Army for my entire childhood. So I had not gone to the same school 2 years in a row until seventh grade in LaGrange here.
That's amazing.
Which was kind of, I think, a big factor in a lot of things that have made me who I am today.
Well, can I just stop you right away? What is that like to be the new kid over and over and over again?
Well, I think growing up where I would be the new kid every year was something that became my entire identity, where it was super fun to be that girl that everybody was looking at in the hallways and no one knew and I was a mystery. And I really think it was hard for me when I did become settled in LaGrange because suddenly I was like, well, who am I? Everybody knows me now. What am I supposed to be? And so
that you were more comfortable. You were comfortable in the role of the new kid.
I did kind of like it. I liked like the first day at CAS and everybody was like, who is that? And I was like, hi, you guys. And no one knew. And then it was hard for me, I think, when I started letting people in because I'd never really done that before. And so I think relationships for me were always kind of a struggle because I always had an end date with them. All my best friends, I always knew I'd have to say goodbye. So when I got to LaGrange, it was the first time where I was like, well, these have to be lasting now. And I'd never known how to do it.
And that seems kind of brutal to hear about it, like those first 6 years
exactly.
Or whatever. Is it?
I mean, it was. Honestly, it was, you know, it was kind of hard having to always say goodbye and whatnot. And then it made me really struggle with staying in touch with people and reaching out to people and putting myself out there because it was always like, what's the point of getting to know people if I have to leave?
I could see where you kind of adopt kind of almost this superficial approach to relationships,
exactly.
Right? Like, okay, this is going to be, I don't want to get in too deep here. I'm leaving soon.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So I really think that has played a huge part in who I am today because, you know, it was hard when I got here and I realized that, you know, at CASA and then on to Park Junior High and then at LT that, you know, who am I if I'm not the new girl? And I had to come up with, really soul search and figure out all that while I'm just trying to deal with the normal daily life of a high school student. So it was an added thing for me, I think.
Right. And what was the toughest part of suddenly being settled and having a second year and a third year and a fourth in the same spot?
Right. I think the hardest thing for me was realizing that these friendships that I was making did not have an end date and that I really needed to work on opening myself up and being vulnerable with people because I'd never done that before. And, you know, I currently am in a relationship with my boyfriend. We've been together for over a year now, and that's been something I'm probably most proud of because he's allowed me to be vulnerable and to open myself up and to let someone in for the first time in my life.
I work with people three times your age. You've been on the planet for about two decades, right? Three times your age who struggle with that, like being vulnerable enough to really be open in a relationship.
Exactly.
How do you get to that point? Like, you know, when you're not used to it, when you
right.
have to teach yourself that.
Well, I think trust is the hugest part of it. I almost think as much as love is important in a relationship, obviously trust is just as big of a factor because, you know, if I didn't trust in him that he truly had feelings for me and that was able to make me feel safe, I wouldn't be able to be who I am with him.
Yeah. How'd you know you could trust him?
He's a really good guy. And
he is a good guy.
And I think that it was because I had known him before. We met back in freshman year algebra at LT, and then didn't start dating until our freshman year at Illinois together. So I think it was that known part of him. I knew we loved his family. We've been family friends for forever. He had a lot of the same values as me. So I think we were on the same page for a lot of things, and that clearly helped. So, yeah.
Is it ever tough? Is it ever tough to be open and vulnerable and, you know, kind of in a relationship? And
absolutely. I think I'm someone who, you know, again, going back to what I'd always known, which was being a mystery to people, it's hard to always tell someone what I'm doing and, like, to respond to texts and whatnot. I've been someone that is guilty of, like, playing games, I guess, and, like, not answering. And, like, I hope they wonder where I am. And it's like, that doesn't matter. That's so stupid. You know, I'm dating him for a reason. Like, I can tell him things. I can open up. And it's refreshing to finally, like, let my guard down.
Yeah. Like, what was the benefit going back in being a mystery? You know what I mean? Like, so there's a reason we do these things, right? And you don't answer a text. And I work with people who are like, I can't believe this is a friend of mine. She's not answering me. You know, like, I've seen that other side. What was it like for you, and what's the upside?
I think for me, as a control freak, it's total control. I think it's like being the holder of the cards and saying that, you know what, I know there's people that are like, well, trying to get a hold of me or whatever. And it's more of a control thing, definitely, that to be the one that is like, you know what, I'm not telling you things, or I'm not sharing things with you. And I think that speaks also to social media with this day and age, because everybody's putting stuff out there, and I've never been one to want to share things. You know, I wrote my college admittance essays into the College of Media, Illinois, on how I had no social media, because I only got an Instagram this past year, and then I got a Facebook August of 2015, which was unheard of because people my age had it since seventh grade.
No kidding.
So
that
I was a little behind, but I just had no desire to want to share where I was. And on top of that, I was like, who cares? No one cares. But people do care if you're not sharing, because it's different. And so people are like, well, what are you doing? Or, like, you know, celebrities that don't have Instagrams are like, well, I wonder what they're doing. But in this day and age, it just seems like information and whereabouts and the best edited pictures are just being thrown out every second, that, you know, it's like an overload, I think. And it's overwhelming.
Right. Yeah. So was this just a good instinct on your part at 15, 16, 17 to not have a Facebook, an Instagram, a Twitter? Was that just like smart because you didn't want that information overload, or was it kind of a carefully crafted image of invulnerability?
I absolutely think you hit it on the head with that last one. I think it was more about just not telling anybody what I was doing, not wanting to interact with people online. I think I was so resistant to getting to know people in the real world. It was like, why would I get to know them online? And I think for me, it was a lot of not being involved, because during high school, that's when Twitter like took off and everybody was tweeting things about like LT basketball games and whatnot. Everybody was involved. And then I just chose not to partake. And then when I did get them, it was like, oh, you know, this is kind of exciting to be able to be like, have a following and whatnot. But I'm still very, you know, closed off in terms of sharing things. I'm not real, like, some people share everything on it. I do like to keep things private. I like to try to stay in real time.
Yeah. What do you think of people who, you know, hyper share? You know, this is what I had for lunch today.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people, given all these platforms that people now have, are thinking that they're more followed, or people are really interested in them more than they really are. So I think everybody acts like they are a celebrity now, and it's like, oh, I'm at this fancy restaurant, or I'm eating this, or I'm with these people in this outfit, and they think people want to know about that. And they do. I think it is nice to share some things, but I do think these people that are on it all the time sharing things, it's, you're missing out on real life connections and real time. And I don't really think it's a reflection of real life. I think it's a very edited and like posed and very, you know, they choose what they want to share, and it makes them look amazing, even if they are dealing with other things.
And did that play a number on you? Like, if you didn't have Twitter, Instagram, but were you following people? Were you aware of what was out there?
I think so, yes. And I think after I did get involved with specifically Instagram, which I think is the biggest, you know, reflection of these people posing and editing their lives to make them look perfect.
Yeah.
I think it's hard when it comes to comparing yourself to other people. Because as I kind of touched in the article, you know, how is it okay to be in your bed with, like, your pajamas on, you didn't go out tonight, you know, whatever, and you're looking at these pictures and Snapchat videos of people having the times of their lives, and you're like, well, why am I not having fun?
Yeah.
But it's like they're choosing to show that and to make it look like that. There's no, you don't even know if they're friends with them. They just are taking a video of them at a bar. So
you are so, I mean, what you said in the article, what you're saying now is so true. I mean, I think that plays such a number on people because it makes it look like people just put their best moments, right?
Absolutely.
Their most, the funnest moments.
Right.
And you can craft that moment in a photograph, right? And then, you know, and right, if you're laying in your bed alone, you're just thinking, oh God, you know, this sucks. And,
exactly.
You know, yeah.
And
yeah.
So I think it really plays into comparison. I think people, you know, especially in college, from what I know, is that especially these girls that I know that are going out every night, posting pictures of them at the bars, at events, you know, whatever, it makes you wonder, what else is there to you? You know, do you struggle with other things? Do you have insecurities, or do you just choose to edit your pictures to make them look flawless to then put them out to show everybody that you're having a good time? But deep down, when you look back at yourself, are you having a good time?
Right.
You know, are you happy, I guess?
Yeah, it's a great question, because we record these moments, which would suggest we're not really in them, right?
Absolutely.
We're not really available to them. We're
right.
really just holding up our phones and capturing
exactly.
something that looks like a moment. Yeah.
Right. And I think the one thing that I've noticed is that it feels like we are creating moments specifically for Instagram for the purpose of taking a picture rather than just a simple documentation of a moment. It feels like a very crafted thing. And I think that's the new discrepancy with Instagram, the thing that I've noticed. It's like, what could be my caption for something? And it's like, you haven't even gone to this event yet, and you're
right.
thinking of a caption.
Right,
you
right,
know?
Right.
So it's like, you don't even know what your picture could be. And the best moments are the ones that aren't scripted.
Right, but you're programming it somehow ahead of time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that has become the new thing, and it's weird. It's really weird.
Well, you brought up celebrity. And you got me thinking now about the changing nature of celebrity, because
right.
I think Instagram allows for anybody to kind of occupy that space, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I agree, yeah.
Do you think a lot of people your age, like, that's the goal? Because I work with people, and their sole goal is, I want to be famous one day.
Right.
You know, I don't necessarily sing, I don't act, I'm not going to be a journalist, I just want to be famous.
Exactly.
I want to be Kardashian famous.
Yep. I think it has become the new thing to want to be, you know, these supermodels like Gigi Hadid or Kendall Jenner, who truly it's like, okay, your family is famous. No offense to them, but like you really are here because of your history and your family. And I think people that, you know, follow those types of celebrities who really are girls my age, you know, they're 20, 21, just killing the fashion scene or whatever and modeling internationally and whatnot, you know, they live for their Instagram. And it's like, people want to be like that. They want to have these sponsorships. And so now it seems like girls have blogs about things like, you know, click the link in my bio for the video on how to style this outfit and whatnot. Everybody's trying to get on board this blogger, like
right.
famous celeb thing. And it just, it's like Instagram has become your brand for you.
Absolutely. Oh, great. Well put. Right. It is a really, wildly efficient vehicle for it,
yeah.
and not always in the best way.
Exactly. I think it's almost becoming like, you know, like you'll say hashtag ad for like all these things, and it's like you're posting this because this company is going to pay you for you to tag their bikini in your picture and
yep.
like whatever. And it just, I don't know, it doesn't seem original anymore. It doesn't seem like it's the individuals coming for it. It's like the, you know,
so you seem really drawn to, and maybe this is new for you, you can tell me, to authenticity. And there's something inauthentic, I think you're describing, about Instagram maybe in particular.
Yes, I think so too. I think it's just, you know, one image that shows one thing and it leaves out the rest of real life. It shows
yeah.
that, you know, okay, yeah, you can go downtown Chicago to this restaurant and take a picture with your best friend there, which is so fun, whatever. But it doesn't show like the struggles you might have with your best friend in normal life, or even, you know, a picture that you post with your boyfriend. Like I'm guilty of that. I'll post a picture with my boyfriend. And, you know, clearly this nice photo of us at like a date event does not show, the struggles that every relationship goes through.
Right, of course.
It's a very, you know, it's just one image showing one moment, but people take it and think like, oh, their life is perfect.
Yep.
Because of that. And it's not a true reflection.
All right. So when I think back to, and I don't know everything about your high school years,
uh-huh.
but I would imagine that there are people you went to high school with, maybe people you go to college with, who think you're that person, you're that celebrity, you've got that perfect life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any part of you that wants that image out there? Or do you feel like, no, I don't think people think that of me?
You know, I do, not to, you know, toot my own horn or whatever, but people have told me, they'll say, like, you know what, you really do have your stuff together. And it's like, that is a really nice thing to hear, but
mm-hmm.
it's not true. You know, we all have our own struggles. I think back to my freshman year, I was on scholarship for Army ROTC. I was in the Army, and it's like, when I think back to that, that was such a different time in my life because everybody was like, oh, she can like be into shopping. She can be best dressed, voted at LT, but then be in the Army and stuff. And people had those two images of me and that was it. And then, you know, when I got to college, when no one knew me, people were like, oh, you're an ROTC. You're not in a sorority. You're weird. Or like people would look at ROTC and be like, why are you doing that? That's so weird. You're not in a sorority. You're not normal. And
wow, is that right? It felt like you were...
I would say that would be 50% why I chose not to continue, which I do regret, but I think it helped me as an individual to grow because it helped my sense of self-confidence. It was really hard walking around campus on the uniform when no one knew me. No one knew my story. They just saw some blonde in an Army uniform, and they were like, who is that? Why is she in that uniform? And I had bad comments directed towards me. Like, if I would go out, they would be like, you know, what? Why can't you stay out later? And it's like, I had PT in the morning at 5 a.m., and they'd be like, why are you in the Army? Why aren't you in a sorority? Why aren't you doing what everybody else does? And it was definitely hard, but... Then I think about the one Instagram picture I posted of me in my uniform at Camp Atterbury, Indiana, on a field training exercise, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, you're so cool, like all this stuff, but I never felt that inside. So there's a perfect example of me posting a picture of me in my Army uniform, and I was proud of that caption. I was like, when you think you're Cadet Kelly, which was this Disney Channel movie about a blonde in the Army. And I was like, maybe I am Cadet Kelly. But everybody was like, that is so cool. But I never felt that inside.
I didn't.
I felt awful. And that's when I knew that I was like, this is not the right life path for me. And that's why I ended up declining the scholarship and I got out of the Army ROTC. But, you know, I think just that one image shows like, oh, you know, she can do it. She can. But it's like, that's not how I was feeling. I felt awful. I hated it.
Yeah, tell me more about, when you talk about the Army, I have this image in my mind, the day, I don't know if it was the day you graduated or the day they gave out the scholarships
yes.
or something, right?
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
And this moment where everyone's getting their $3,000 scholarships and then Jillian had like a $100,000 scholarship, right? It was like, and everyone went nuts. I mean,
yeah.
It was, the place was up for grabs and everyone was super excited about it, right?
Right.
Or
so
it would seem. Did it feel odd even then? Or was it once you got to campus and you were wearing the fatigues and and everything that you've got comments?
Yes, it was absolutely then. I think I had not even thought about that. Me and my limitedness of the Army, I was like, oh, there will be galas. I can wear nice dresses. Literally. Like,
really?
The worst reason to get into the Army, clearly.
For galas. Yeah.
For galas. I mean, obviously, I'd grown up with the military. I wanted to serve. I wanted to do something. But then I was like, oh, the galas. That's a total bonus. But it was definitely not until I got to campus and realized the realness of it and being like, you know what? It's not all pretty. It's not all amazing. Like I'm like a soldier now. I'm a cadet. And I definitely think as amazing as receiving that scholarship and as humbled as I was by the response from people, you know, telling me congratulations, like good for you. We're so happy for you and whatnot. I don't think I realized how it would impact me like as a person until I actually was there doing those sit-ups at 5 a.m. in the morning or, you know, being the only girl in the freshman class. And I don't think I realized how it would impact me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it was scary. I was not mentally prepared for that. I just thought that it would be a breeze.
You did.
I did. I really did. I don't think I thought I never weighed the pros or cons. I was just like, I'm all in, whatever.
Was there a moment your freshman year where you realized, you know, this isn't working, this isn't my path?
I think it was, freshman year for me was definitely a hard time just because of the, I think, that whole thing in a brand new place with brand new people that didn't know me, didn't know who I was, the added pressure of ROTC and all of the struggles of that, you know, really played into it. And I honestly think I was trying to tell myself that I could do it until I came home for winter break. And I went and saw a therapist to try to weigh my options about it. And I think I was so torn. It was so torn because if I stayed in, think of all the great benefits that would come from it. You know, I'd have a job, I'd be colleges paid for,
right?
You know, whatever. But the cons were that I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
And even though it was very cool to show people that, yeah, I am a blonde, like anybody can really do this. If you're a girl, whatever, like breaking those barriers, it was hard for me to advocate something I wasn't even passionate about.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it was definitely that, the winter break semester, because I realized that it was not for me. And then I thought, I was like, oh, well, if I do a sorority, then I'll be better. And then I'll be normal. And everybody will be like, what house you're in? And then I'll say it. And it'll be like, oh, you're a normal person, whatever. And then I ended up rushing a sorority sophomore year. And I did join, but then I dropped because that wasn't for me either.
Is that right?
It's true. Yeah. So I don't know. It was a lot of societal pressure, I think, playing into it. Like, oh, ROTC is weird. But if you're in a sorority, you're normal. But then I realized happiness wouldn't be met for me personally by being in a sorority. So there was a lot of, like, internal conflict going on with me even this past year, because it was like, I have to figure out what I like to do best, and these two things weren't what I enjoyed.
I get it. I'm thrown by this idea, as I sit here across from you, that you felt weird, that you felt like, you know, like I'm not conforming to the norm here somehow, you know, and that's not working for me, you know, like I got to get back there somehow. And, you know, and I get where it's like, okay, I'll join a sorority. That'll be the thing, you know, then I'll feel like normal. Are we overrating normal?
You know what? I think specifically I'll speak to what it feels like on a college campus. You know what? If you're not, to me, at least on the University of Illinois or Urbana-Champaign campus, if you're not in a sorority, you're nothing. It honestly is how it feels. And so I think with that definition in my head, all my freshman year, as, you know, I'm going to ROTC and being, you know, with all these guys around me, I was like, well, maybe that would be a good balance to be in a sisterhood or whatever. And, you know, to go out to parties and whatever and have people say, oh, what house are you in, and be comfortable with it.
Right.
But then after I ended up declining ROTC and then joining the sorority, I realized that wasn't my path to happiness either. And it was not, even though it was normal to be in one, I realized that, you know what, it wasn't for me.
Was that kind of a big revelation? I mean, because I get where, I've heard that about U of I before, like, you know, hey, this is the way to be socially accepted and connected. And, you know, to recognize, oh, this doesn't work for me either. First of all, how did you know, like, this isn't my path either?
You know what? I think I really value my gut instinct. It talks to me a lot. It tells me when things are right and wrong. And sometimes I don't listen to it. And my freshman year, I rushed, and then I ended up dropping during the process before I ever joined. And so that was, you know, during the height of all my ROTC stuff. So then flash forward to this past fall semester, when I did rush as a sophomore, went through it all. And then I got in, I accepted a bid to a sorority and got in. And then I think I realized that it just wasn't for me at all. And I kind of remember back to my freshman year, and I thought back, why did I drop back freshman year? And I didn't honor it then. Because I thought everybody was telling me you should be in a house, or you belong in a house. You're such a sorority girl. And it's like, there's more to me than that. And it's, and I hope there's more to me than that, than just this image that people think of me.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, that goes to back to the what you present on social media and whatnot. And I did post a picture back on bid day when I was with my new sisters and whatever. And everybody was like, oh, you're so amazing, we love you, and all this stuff. But it wasn't real to me. It was not real. It was so artificial. And once I got in there, I realized that, you know what, I don't think this is for me at all. And I honored my gut, and I ended up declining again.
It's so impressive in a way, that you worked so hard to hear yourself through this cacophony of like noise, right? Social media, people telling you you're awesome in both of these ventures.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that must, that seems like it would take a lot of internal, like kind of self-reflective, insightful work to get to the point where you're like, okay, even that's not for me, even though people are telling me I'm so awesome and I'm this, and this is the mold I fit. I'm a sorority girl, right?
Yeah. I think absolutely. Both of, you know, the thought processes to get to the realization to drop ROTC and then to ultimately drop the sorority, it was a lot of like isolation and feelings of being alone because no one I knew freshman year that was like a girl like me. They were all the guys and they were so nice and whatever. But there, I felt very alone. I didn't feel like anybody could, you know, relate to what I was going through. And then same with the sorority, you know, everybody's in one. No one really drops. Like, I mean, people do, but not after they joined and really felt included in it. And so I think there was a part that of me that did feel very alone. And even though I didn't present that like on if I saw people like on the way to class or whatever, or even on Instagram, no one would know how alone I felt and how anxious I would feel if I went out because I was like, I don't have a big group of friends to go out to the bars with me. You know, I don't have this sorority group. And it was hard. It was really hard. Even like last month when I would go out, it would be very rare because I would feel so alone and no one would ever know that, but it's hard.
No one would know that, would they?
Mm-mm. It was, yeah, just kind of a weird isolation. And it's hard to honor your gut feeling when it feels like no one else is and you're doing something that no one else is doing. I feel like I'm constantly taking this difficult route instead of just letting myself have fun. But I know that that route of having fun is not what my gut is telling me to do. So even though it would be so much easier to have stayed in the sorority and to just have these fun friendships for going out, I knew that it was not, it wasn't what my heart was telling me to do.
I love that. I love that you listened to, attended to, and listened to your instincts. I think people of any age kind of fail that way too often and create like symptoms for themselves. Jillian, you were kind enough to say you'd stick around for a while, so let's call it for now. We'll come back in just a couple of minutes, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, thanks for being here.
Thank you.